time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time for Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon Goldsboro joins us now. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
So what are we discussing this week?
Well, some listeners may know that in addition to this weekly radio column, I also write books and make videos about Manitoba history. Recently, our production team began filming a new series of videos, and we had some interesting experiences that I thought we would talk about today.
So when did you start making videos?
Well, it goes back a long time. Long-time listeners may recall that this Abandoned Manitoba series started in June of 2015, so we're pushing on almost 10 years. Shortly after that, I was contacted by some filmmakers in Brandon who asked if I might be interested in working with them on a video series they were calling Hidden Manitoba. The premise was to introduce viewers to little-known places in southwestern Manitoba. In the end, we made 8 videos, and one of them was, in fact, filmed at the Bertel Residential School, which was our very first subject here on Abandoned Manitoba. By the way, if anybody wants to see those early videos, all 8 are on the YouTube channel of the Manitoba Historical Society. Okay, jump forward to mid-2020. Of course, that year will stick in everyone's mind. The global pandemic was in its early stages, and we at the Manitoba Historical Society realized that our slate of programming would have to change. In view of the restrictions on public gatherings, we simply couldn't get people together in a room. Videos seemed like a good non-contact way to raise awareness about Manitoba history, so we proposed a continuation of that original Hidden Manitoba concept. One of the major TV networks had some money left from productions that had had to shut down due to COVID, so they offered us, and we gladly accepted, by the way, funds to make 5 10 to 15 minute videos that took their name from this radio series, Abandoned Manitoba, and we were told at the time that it would be a one-time opportunity.
How so?
Well, the network had no assurance, of course, that our videos would be popular. And in any case, they wanted to spread the money around the many independent filmmakers who were out there. When our Abandoned Manitoba videos were broadcast to subscribers of that network's streaming service, they were, I'm told, well received. So much so that we were offered the chance to make a second series of videos. They too got a lot of views, and at that time we assumed there was no likelihood of further funding, but we figured, what the heck? Why not ask? So earlier this year, we proposed making a third set of Abandoned Manitoba videos, and pleasantly, we were surprised to be approved. That's why we're now on the road, making more videos.
And what are these new videos going to be about?
Well, I can't reveal all the details. I want to preserve the surprise when they're broadcast, but I can share 2 recent experiences that really stood out for me. The first relates to a topic we've discussed here on Abandoned Manitoba previously, the huge number of burial sites around Manitoba that are at risk because they have no formal protection. Unlike graves in a designated cemetery, which are protected under the Cemeteries Act, a burial site in the middle of a farmer's field, for example, on private property, could easily be plowed under with no consequences. Now, in my view, such an act would be morally wrong. But until the government revises the Cemeteries Act, there's nothing but persuasion to prevent it. And that's why I want to draw the attention of our listeners today to the old MacArthur Cemetery near Rapid City.
What is its story?
We'll go back to 1874, soon after Manitoba has become a province. The federal government granted John Ralston of Ottawa a tract of land near present-day Rapid City to establish an agricultural settlement. One of the farmers who Ralston recruited to join his colony was a Scotsman named Robert MacArthur. MacArthur settled land near where the Fort Ellis Trail crossed the Little Saskatchewan River, and in time he donated a few acres from his land for use as a public cemetery. Through the years, several people were buried there. Now, MacArthur himself moved to a farm northeast of Dauphin around 1893, and he died there in 1903, but he was not buried back in his own cemetery. He was actually buried in the Dauphin Cemetery, but jump forward to now, and a few weeks ago, we went to film at that old MacArthur Cemetery.
And what condition is that in?
Well,
that says it all, Gordon.
There's the story. Well, first of all, I want to give a big shout out to landowner Scott Moore, who guided us to the site. His family has owned the land around the cemetery for decades, but he made clear that the land occupied by the cemetery itself is owned by the rural municipality of Oakview. The MacArthur Cemetery is heavily overgrown with mature trees and dense undergrowth, including huge amounts of poison ivy. You really got to watch where you're walking. The dense foliage makes it almost impossible to see the grave markers. And at some point in the past, some people, it appears, who were buried there were disinterred and presumably buried elsewhere. The holes from those graves were not refilled with soil. So, you know, it looks almost like a reforested battlefield, you know, where there were explosions and there's holes everywhere. It's really not very pleasant looking.
Or perhaps not even particularly respectful way to remember the dead.
Absolutely. You know, it doesn't seem to me the right way to be treating the people who are buried there. And I think what bothers me most about this particular case is that the cemetery is on public, not private land. You know, I really think the municipality has an obligation to either clean up the cemetery, which would be my preference, or move its remaining graves to the rather nicely tended cemetery at Rapid City.
Now, you mentioned two recent experiences while filming. What was the other one?
Well, one of our new video episodes concerns the use of the Red River as a transportation corridor, including the cruise ships that operated on it starting in the 1960s. Listeners may recall that at one time there were at least four ships cruising up and down the river, the Paddle Wheel Queen, the Paddle Wheel Princess, the Lady Winnipeg, and the River Rouge. Now, the first of those two ships have been dismantled and their metal has been recycled. They're gone. The Lady Winnipeg sits beached on the east side of the Red River, looking quite forlorn and rusty, and the River Rouge is in a side branch of the river at Selkirk. Now, a couple of winters ago, I struggled through waist-deep snow to see the River Rouge, as I was curious about its present condition. Now, it visually, it looked not so good. It was covered in peeling paint. But, you know, I mean, there was nothing really obviously problematic with it. You know, it looked in reasonably good shape, at least as much as I could tell from the appearance alone, standing, of course, on the ice below it, looking up. But I was left with the question, could the River Rouge still operate if someone wanted it to?
And what did you find out?
Well, this time when I visited the River Rouge, I was able to look into a few of its windows from outside, and I could see what looked like watermarks on its interior walls, as though the ship had been submerged. You know, and I wondered about this. You know, I actually spoke with a person who lives nearby the ship, and he told me that when the Red River floods, the River Rouge goes underwater. In other words, it doesn't rise with the rising water. It stays where it is, and the water comes up and floods it. Apparently, he said, according to some, there was some kind of hatch in the hull that had been left open and therefore the water could rush in. During one of those floods, the person told me, only the top of the upper deck was above water. In other words, the ship was almost completely submerged. Now, this sounds to me like a bad thing, so I'm now more pessimistic that the River Rouge will ever cruise again. But heck, what do I know? I'm just a historian, not a marine mechanic. Someone with the ability to give the River Rouge a thorough inspection should look at it before it's too far gone. Anyway, those are a couple of my experiences in filming the third season of Abandoned Manitoba videos, and listeners can look forward to seeing them on the Bell 5 TV service later this year, or possibly early in 2025, and eventually on YouTube.
Now, when should I make my pitch for the Gordon Goldsboro reality TV show?
I don't think anyone would want to watch that.
I would.
I don't want to watch that.
Thanks so much, Gordon. What's up for next week?
Well, when we upload videos to YouTube for people to watch, we're always interested in seeing which specific videos get the most views. One of our most popular videos was about the town of Pope in Western Manitoba. Now, have you ever heard of it, Nadia?
I have not, no.
Well, that's not surprising because it is a ghost town that was named not for the leader of the Catholic Church, but for a railway company official. But next week, we'll talk about some ghost towns that have a special connection to Manitoba Premiers.
Oh, can't wait. Thank you, Gordon.
Talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many